This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Mark Castle is on the line with us. He's the co-founder of the Cornucopia Institute, the senior farm policy analyst, co-director, and director of the Organic Integrity Project. Cornucopia.org is the website. And his Twitter handle is Cornucopia_INST, as in institute. Mark, welcome to the program. Mark? Oh, we got to crank up your volume there. Hey, Mark, can you hear me? Okay, I'm putting you on the phone. Mark? We got no Mark. Apparently, he's not hearing us. Okay. I'm gonna put him on hold. You need to pot him down, Sean. I'm going to continue with the show, and we'll let Shira work this out. Some of the things that we're learning from Omarosa. Omarosa claims that Donald Trump slammed the idea of putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. Remember when there was this discussion about who or what should go on the $20 bill? Should it be, you know, I mean, right now it's Andrew Jackson, who's Trump's hero, you know, the guy who did the Trail of Tears, the guy who took down the Second National Bank, the guy who defied the Supreme Court twice. You know, pretty grim stuff. I mean, a genocidal slaveholding maniac. Of course, he's Trump's favorite president. And so, you know, a lot of people were proposing other people, and one of them proposed Harriet Tubman. And, you know, Trump's response to that, this is what he said to Omarosa. He said, "Do you want me to put that face on a $20 bill? Seriously? That is bizarre." Okay, back. Let's try Mark again. Mark Castle, the co-founder of the Cornucopia Institute, senior farm policy analyst, co-director and director of the Organic Integrity Project. Mark, are you with us this time?
Greetings from Wisconsin.
Thank you. So tell us, you wrote this piece about how this USDA-backed factory farm takeover of organic milk production is scaling, the family-scale farmers are being pushed out of business. Tell us about this.
Well, when Congress passed the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990, they envisioned the USDA protecting organic consumers from fraud and organic practitioners, farmers, from illegal and unfair competition. And it really hasn't worked out very well under either Republican or Democratic administrations. They have sided with corporate agribusiness. There's a industrial agricultural takeover of organics. So we estimate about half the milk in this country is coming from giant factory farms, milking as many as 15,000 cows. Usually in the desert states in the West. And so we really have two organic labels today. They both share that same USDA logo, but if we're talking about milk and dairy products, one comes from family farmers who carefully steward the earth, who care for their animals. Their cows usually have names, not numbers. They get their hands dirty for a living. And the other half comes from factory farms that look just like conventional factory farms. So when consumers turn to organics for safer and more nutritious food, they're getting ripped off. We partnered with the Washington Post last year that did testing of various organic milk brands. And the ones that come from factory farms that were produced by Aurora Dairy, so they supply Walmart and Costco and Target, that nutritionally they were in some cases inferior to even conventional milk. And so consumers know that real organic milk from cows that live happy cow lives out on grass have higher levels of omega-3s and other antioxidants and taste great. And so our report and the scorecard that accompanies it that's available at cornucopia.org really empowers consumers and wholesale buyers to supersede the USDA and decide what really is going to be called organic.
I'm guessing what is going on is that there is so much demand for organic products now that we're learning. I mean, Scott Pruitt's, maybe it wasn't the EPA, maybe it was the USDA, but whatever, the Trump administration has tried to put, and in fact did put, another really deadly pesticide into the marketplace. They're not regulating these things. at the same time that so many people want to be buying organic products and are willing to pay a little extra to not get the poisons, that the organic producers, the packagers, the ones who are bringing the products to our homes or to our stores, that there's not enough family farms to supply them. Is that the case? I mean, it certainly seems like that's probably the dynamic here.
Yeah, Tom, it's actually not the case. We need USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue to actually enforce the law. Right now, there's a glut of organic milk. It's forcing family farmers out of business. There's plenty of milk out there.
Hmm.
The problem is that these venture capitalists and investment banks have started, these are not, quote, farmers. We even have the Harvard Endowment Fund involved in this. Hmm. They have invested in these mammoth, what technically we call CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. So they're feedlots that milk cows.
Right.
And they produced a tidal wave of milk, and they're now drowning these family farmers who have been in business in many cases for decades. And folks are losing their farms. So when consumers choose organics, not only are they getting a superior product for their family, but they're supporting a better environmental stewardship, a more humane animal husbandry model, and economic justice for the people who produce our food. So that's why we have this scorecard, so they can vote in the marketplace, in essence.
Right. So the presumably these big industrial organic milk producers, and I put organic in scare quotes, right, are not injecting their cows with bovine growth hormone, and they're not using routinely using antibiotics and things like that. So it should be a better product. Why is it not?
Well, we call that organic by substitution. So first of all, we know that land that's stewarded carefully to nurture the microbiome in the soil creates nutritionally dense food. And so if you're just creating milk and you're just not using certain banned drugs and certain banned agrochemicals, obviously that's better than conventional milk that might be contaminated, but you're not getting that nutritional superiority. And one of the reasons that we feel good about paying a premium for organic products is, again, we think we're supporting this different set of values for how our food is produced: fairness to people, respectful treatment to animals, and careful stewardship of the planet. And so we're getting ripped off if we're not getting those added externalities aren't part of the mix.
Right.
So it's more than just avoiding toxins in our food.
So if people want to figure out what kinds of organic products to look for, they should go to cornucopia.org. Is that right, Mark?
Right. CornuCopia.org.
Cornucopia.org. Mark Castle, the director. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Good talking with you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls and news of the day after this. And at the bottom of the hour, Bobby Kennedy's going to drop by. Stick around. And welcome back. Les in Central Square, New York. Hey, Les, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm well. What's up?
Hey, I'm believing that we do not have any free press in this country anymore. You cannot.
I feel
call
pretty
in
free.
Any station or do anything. Okay, you can't do anything because they won't let you do anything, or they only put on what they want to put on.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm running my own show here. I say what I want to. I don't answer to anybody, other than you. I mean, basically, I suppose if I said a bunch of wacky stuff, I'd lose listeners, but. I think, and viewers, but I think that there's still a free press here. It's just not the big press.
You know?
Say that again, Les.
As a rule, we don't have it in this country.
Well, we have
people watch the mainstream media.
Yeah, we have a corporate media. We have media that is beholden to the profit motive, first and foremost.
You can't have any free press on it because they won't let you talk and tell you the truth of what's going on. That's what's needed for a free press.
Well, to some extent. I mean, there are some areas where the corporate press has put blinders on their talent. You know, their talent are, broadly speaking, not allowed to talk about Net neutrality, not allowed to talk about corporate ripoffs, not allowed to talk about corporate mergers and the lack of competition, because they all
PPP,
embody those things.
About,
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. But that's not a free press.
I don't disagree with you, but it's what we have. What's your solution?
I'm trying to find out to help you talk to me about it here, about solutions. Uh-huh. I know one solution is that... okay, what's his name? Who's the guy that ran Obama's campaign?
There were several people. I'm not sure who you're talking about.
No, the one there. Anyway.
There were two different campaigns.
I was on TV the other day on one of the other stations there, and he said that you got to get rid of Fox News. And he brought up the Fairness Doctrine. I mean, it's got to happen sooner or later.
The Fairness Doctrine would not have eliminated Fox News. But that said, I think that there's really two things that we need to do, and they both involve just basically reversing the Reagan Revolution. The first one is to bring back ownership rules, local ownership rules for radio and television stations, so you don't have these giant right-wing oligopolies like, you know, Sinclair Broadcasting or Clear Channel and these other big networks. And once again, the ownership of radio and television stations is at the state level and at the local level. Number one. And number two, break up the big monopolies, break up the big cable companies, break up the big ISPs, internet service providers. And in the process, then you would make more local programming available and more diverse programming available. Enforce the Sherman Act, which Reagan stopped enforcing in 82, and bring back the ownership rules, which Reagan blew up with blowing up the Fairness Doctrine in 87. This is all reversing the Reagan Revolution. The Reagan Revolution is what brought us this situation. And when people get it, then maybe we can have some positive movement on this. But does that make sense, Les?
The other thing is we got to get rid of that Clinton law they put in.
Oh, the Telecommunications Act of 96. Yeah, that was the second big hit to ownership rules. I agree with you. I think it needs to be rewritten. Les, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking the truth, the multinational corporations would rather you didn't know all about. John in Asheville, North Carolina, listening to us on a 101.1 FM. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I just have an idea, a quick idea for a whole program, and that would be voting your conscience and your principles at primary time and voting your Democratic Party at election time.
I agree.
Yeah. I know, and I don't know how you create excitement for the people who feel that there's no difference, but other than just obviously, what kind of a government do they really think that Hillary would have provided if she had won?
I think it would be a very different one than the one we have right now. I said at the time, and I continue to think, that Hillary Clinton had the potential, particularly with a progressive Democratic Party behind her. When you go back and look at the platforms that she and her husband ran on, now he didn't govern on, but what they ran on in 1992, the New Covenant speech, was FDR. It was FDR all the way. And I think that is unfortunately, she didn't run for president on that. If she had, she would have beaten Donald Trump easily. But they had all these advisors, and it was, everything was micromanaged. But I thought at the time, and I still think, that she had the potential to be a truly great president.
Yeah, me too. I voted Hillary. I'm a
so
Bernie. I sent money to Bernie.
Yeah,
and I
me
have
too.
Never, I have rarely, if ever, sent any money to any organization or any political party or any... It's certainly any.
Well, this is the extraordinary power of speaking the truth. I mean, Bernie speaks truth to power, And people go, yeah, I want that. And people thought that Trump was speaking truth to power. He said, you know, every Republican on this stage wants to do away with your Social Security and Medicare. I'm not going to touch them. He lied, of course. He said, I'm going to be badly hurt by my tax reforms, and all of my rich buddies, we're going to see our taxes go up. No, he lied. 83% of all tax benefits go to one top 1% of taxpayers. He said, I'm going to protect the environment. He lied. I mean, you know, he just lied through the entire campaign, and that's where we're at. So, John, spot on. I thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. Lisa in Sutherland, Oregon. Hey, Lisa, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Nobody says it better than you. I mean, you are so articulate. I wish I could.
Thank you.
I wish I could can what you say.
We do have podcasts you can share with your friends.
So. I do. And yesterday I tried to post your live feed, and it wouldn't go on my Facebook.
Oh, huh.
This is something that, and they shut down my Twitter because I tweeted Kim Jong-un and told him to ignore that thing in the White House.
Oh, my.
But anyway, I've been calling my representatives for many years now. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say that this is the kind of thing that's really, really an obstruction to democracy. First of all, I ask a simple question. Does Ron Wyden support Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill? And I get the runaround. First of all, Ron Wyden doesn't even answer his phone. Jeff Merkley does, and Jeff Merkley has moved on the Jordan Cove pipeline after I hounded him for a year. He could never say whether he was going to be for or against it.
Yeah,
he
Jeff Merkley also supports Medicare for All. What's your point about Ron? Do you want to just call up and bash him? Is that...
No, what I'm saying is that they'll give you a form letter on your issue if you send an email.
Sure.
on their website. And it's a simple question. I say, just tell me yes or no. Does he support it or does he not support it? And I'm never, ever given a straight answer.
Yeah.
And this is very, very frustrating.
Well, Ron Wyden is a more cautious politician. And I'm not sure exactly why. I think he came into politics. When Merkley came into politics, it was riding a progressive wave. Ron Wyden's been around a little longer. He probably came in on a little more Clinton-esque, Bill Clinton-esque, middle of the road or corporatist wave. But that, you know, that doesn't make him a bad legislator. Ron Wyden has, and thank you for the call, Lisa. Ron Wyden has been great on issues like privacy, net neutrality, internet privacy. Ron Wyden has done a lot of good things. I would rather focus on the good things that some of these people are doing than the places where they don't quite live up to our standards. If we want them to live up to our standards, get inside the Democratic Party. Run for precinct committee person or precinct committee chair. And then, you know, write the platform that these elected Democrats have to go with. Megan in Elma, New York, or Elmira, New York. Which is it? Elma? Megan?
It's Alma, actually.
Hey, Megan,
Hello.
What's up? You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling in reference to the conversation you're having with the other gentleman before about the elections with the primaries versus the general.
Right.
Now, I understand why in policy in the primary we want to try to push the party to be more progressive, but why in the general are we supposed to kowtow to being supportive of a Democrat if we think the policies are essentially the same as a Republican besides some social issues?
I don't know any Democrats whose policies are the same as Republicans. I don't know a single Democrat whose policies are the same as Republicans. Do you? Can you name one?
That are the same as Republicans?
Yes.
As far as our economics go? I mean, pretty much
as far as anything, can you name one Democrat who denies climate change?
Most Republicans.
Yeah, okay. This circular firing squad crap is not useful. It's just not useful. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington, listening on KLAY. Chaz, it says you want to disagree with me. What's up?
Na zdrovya, comrade.
Yeah, we have just 1 minute here, Chaz. What's on your mind?
Hey, listen, I agree with the caller earlier who said that we don't have a free press. I mean, with the exception of yourself, there's just some subjects that the main, what used to be called the liberal media now is...
But it was never the liberal media.
Well, no. You remember when I had heard it, and now it's mainstream media, but there's just some things they won't talk about, like Citizens United, net neutrality, that we're living in an oligarchy. I mean, there's some things Rachel Maddow won't talk about. Now, a year or two ago when I had cable, I'd listen to Canadian news, and it would just blow my mind.
Yeah, I get it, Chaz. You know, is this National Complain Day? That is all self-evident, and I've pointed it out. I don't get what the point is. What's your point, Chaz?
Aside from yourself, there's no other voice in the wilderness.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I disagree, and I think that there's some good stuff being done on some of the corporate media. Not a lot of it, not all of it, but there's some good stuff being done out there. I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
That said, I do think that we should be enforcing local ownership rules for radio and television, and I think that we should be breaking up some of these big conglomerates. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. On the line with us, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., Chief Prosecuting Attorney for the Hudson River Keeper, President of the Waterkeeper Alliance, author of several books, most recently Framed, Why Michael Skakel Spent Over a Decade in Prison for a Murder He Didn't Commit. His website, robertfkennedyjr.com, and you can tweet him at Robert Kennedy, Jr. Bobby, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, I am fine, and I hope you are well and your family as well. This Monsanto thing just made my eyes bug out when I saw it. I was like, whoa, they took down Monsanto. Tell us about this decision where these people actually won a victory in a court of law saying that Monsanto was causing cancer.
Well, the background is that in 2015, the International Agency for Cancer Research, which is the premier gold ribbon agency that determines whether compounds are carcinogenic, met on glyphosate, which is the active ingredient of Roundup, which is the ubiquitous herbicide that Monsanto produces. And they made a determination that it is indeed a probable human carcinogen and a definite animal carcinogen. That finding triggered a number of regulatory changes. For example, Prop 65 in California, which is the labeling law in California, is connected to IARC, so that if IARC makes that determination, automatically that substance has to be listed in California stores and retail outlets as being carcinogenic, and a warning has to be attached to it. There's 18 other states that have similar relationships with IARC in many countries around the world. And Monsanto challenged that in court and went to the California Supreme Court, and California won. At the same time, as a result of IARC's finding, thousands of people, specifically IARC found that Roundup causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it's suspected of causing other cancers, including liver cancer, non-alcoholic fatty liver cancer. But we know that it causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, so that triggered a cascade of lawsuits, and there's about five law firms that are signing up cases, and my firm is one of those. And altogether, there's between 4,000 and 5,000 cases signed up. My firm has about 800. The first case of all of those to be tried and reach a jury was the case of a school groundskeeper, a 42-year-old African-American whose name is Dwayne Johnson, who is dying of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that attacked his skin. So he's in a lot of agony, and he's had a very, very tough time, and he was a fantastic witness. We pushed that case to the front of the group because he only has, at most, the doctors say, a year to live, and we wanted to try the case while he was still alive. And the jury in that case, despite real headwinds from the judge, this case was tried in San Francisco Superior Court, California Superior Court in San Francisco. The judge excluded a lot of evidence, probably about 80% of our evidence against Monsanto on the liability issue, ultimately did not make it to the jury. And we were, I think, fairly pessimistic in this case just because the jury was not allowed to see our best evidence. In fact, we weren't even allowed to mention GMOs or Prop 65.
Mm-hmm.
And nevertheless, the jury came back with really an historic and extraordinary verdict, which is altogether it's about $40 million in compensatory damages and $250 million in punitive damages. Bayer, which is the German company, the big chemical firm, big chemical multinational, which used to be called IG Farben, which owns Monsanto.
They dropped that name after the Zyklon gas that they manufactured was being used to kill people during World War II in the camps, isn't that right?
Right. It was used in Auschwitz, and they made huge profits on Zyklon B.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was a killer investment for them. And the six of their top executives were convicted of slavery and a number of other crimes, and one of those became the head of the new company Bayer in 1955. One of the executives had been convicted, and there's been a bad culture of kind of elastic ethics at Bayer. So it was a good match for Monsanto. They swallowed Monsanto for $60 billion in June. But they really swallowed a poison pill, because this is the first of 5,000 cases. There's a lot of them in California who are going to be in front of California judges who are going to be much more inclined to let the jury see all the evidence than this particular judge. And, you know, I think Monsanto really is in trouble now.
Yeah, fascinating. This is all about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and possibly other cancers. And
it's just, we were restricted only to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But as you know, Tom, there's a lot of other health impacts that are associated with Monsanto. One of the problems is, Monsanto was in trouble really because of overreaching. For many years, Monsanto has become the premier herbicide on Earth through, you know, manipulation of by growing two businesses at once. Its GMO business, which made Roundup Ready crops like soybean, wheat, corn, and other ones. So those crops are resistant to the herbicide, to Roundup. So you can literally saturate the landscape with this herbicide. It kills everything it touches except those crops, and those crops then will grow without competition. So that's very attractive, and that had been its business model. But about in 2014, Monsanto developed an off-label use for Roundup. It began going to farmers and saying, not only are we good for weed control, which you spray at the beginning of the growing season so it doesn't ever get on the food, but also you should spray us at the very end of growing season at the harvest, because it turns out that Roundup acts as a desiccant. It dries out the crop and makes it much easier to remove it from the field. So for the first time, they began spraying Roundup on food, literally on the food before it's eaten.
This was I'm wondering if I can line up the timelines here, Bobby. Back in 2001, I developed in quotes celiac disease. If I eat anything with wheat in it, I am. It's like having a severe case of food poisoning.
And there's a really strong evidence that the epidemic of celiac disease is coming from the Roundup.
It was 2001 around the time they started.
Worse, because because they're literally now spraying it on the food, and, you know, it's now been found in children's cereals, it's in oatmeal, it's in granola, it's in virtually all children's cereals, it's in our food, it's in vaccines, it's in our water, it's in plants and animals and mother's breast milk. So it is ubiquitous, it's everywhere. So there's a lot of science now going on, and the science is saying, look, this stuff is probably it's probably responsible for the epidemic in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which we're seeing for the first time in kids. 10-year-old kids are getting this.
Wow.
It used to be a disease that only affected very old people. It also is a chelator, so it removes metals from your body, and minerals, valuable minerals, and it causes these really dangerous imbalances in copper levels in human beings. It's an endocrine disruptor. It destroys the microbiome in the human's gut, and that causes brain inflammation. And so there's a whole constellation of these illnesses that are associated with exposures to glyphosate. And the ubiquitous nature now of glyphosate means that a lot of people are experiencing these illnesses.
That's amazing. So we're talking with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the chief prosecuting attorney for the Hudson River Keeper, president of the Water Keeper Alliance, author of several books, and the guy who took Monsanto to court and won. Bobby, where do we go with this? Where you know, do you expect that we might see at some point less Roundup in our biosphere, and I'll be able to eat wheat again? I mean, you know, is that coming down the road?
You know, I think it is going to come, despite the virtual takeover of our country of corporate money that makes it kind of impervious to anything that doesn't do that doesn't contribute to corporate profit taking. I think the European countries, which still have something left of their democracies, are all looking at banning glyphosate or not relicensing it. And I think the science is cascading, Tom, right now in a way that's going to make, it's going to make consumers revolt against it.
That's good news and remarkable news. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Bobby, you are extraordinary. I got to tell you, you are absolutely one of my heroes. Thank you so much for dropping by our program today and for picking up this case.
Thanks, Tom. Great. Thanks a lot. You're my hero.
Thank you. Back at you. We'll be back. Bobby Kennedy Jr., his most recent book, Framed. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It is 46 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls to wrap up the show after this. And welcome back. James in Franklin, Tennessee, watching us on Free Speech TV via his Roku box. Hey, James, what's up?
Tom?
That's me.
I think we need to go on a farming the way the Netherlands are farming.
Tell me about it.
They're using 80 to 90% less land, less water, 80, 90% less water.
How do they do it?
Than we do on our farming. They're the second producer of produce in the world behind the United States.
How do they do this, James?
They're doing it in giant greenhouses. They got each plant set up on a computer where it gets what it needs when it needs it.
So they've computerized their farming?
No less. They still got nutrition in them. And as far as I can tell, a lot of people say you can't even, I think they even grow it in dirt, you know. But the most of the farming they're doing over there is this way.
So
I came up with this.
They've computerized their greenhouses. That's fascinating. I'll have to look into it. James, thanks for the heads up on that and for the information. Daryl in Henderson, Nebraska. Hey, Daryl, what's on your mind today?
Well, you made the comment that there was no such thing as liberal media. Do you consider yourself liberal media?
I do. What I was saying is that this labeling CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN as liberal media, you know, I think you could probably label MSNBC as liberal media, but the rest of them, no, they're largely corporate media, and CNN is just kind of going right down the middle. Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, I can give you examples of liberal media by NBC, CBS. What about CBS, Dan Rather?
Well, Dan Rather hasn't worked for CBS for over a decade. You know, he was taken down because he exposed George W. Bush's getting out of service in Vietnam. And, you know,
he used a fake document knowingly. What about...
No, it wasn't knowingly, and we don't know that it was a fake document. In fact, I think it was a true document. I think we know that George W. Bush was AWOL for more than a year. And something that, during time of war, typically gets you put up in front of a firing squad. So, I'm not buying it. And beyond that, what does that have to do with liberal or conservative? If the President of the United States was AWOL for a year, that seems like news regardless of his party.
Can we go with today, right now?
Okay.
The lead story almost everywhere is Donald Trump might have used the N-word.
Yeah, I don't really care. I think the larger issue is, I mean, you want to know Donald Trump, if he's a racist, you don't have to ask if he's used the N-word. He called Mexican immigrants rapists. He said laziness is a trait in blacks. He said immigrants from Haiti all have AIDS. He said Nigerian immigrants who saw America could never go back to their huts in Africa. He called for less immigration from Africa, more from Norway. He referred to African countries as S-holes. He spent years claiming Obama didn't have a legal birth certificate. This is from DU's graphic today. Falsely stated that Obama issued a statement for Kwanzaa but failed to issue one for Christmas. It was a lie. He's repeatedly retweeted white nationalists. He said that there were neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville who were very fine people. He calls Senator Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas. He protests black NFL players, calls them SOBs. He was reluctant to disavow David Duke's presidential endorsement. Come on, give me a break. Refer to Hispanic Miss Universe as Miss Housekeeping. He makes up statistics to exaggerate urban crime. No, Donald Trump is a racist. I mean, case closed. You don't have to have an N-word tape. He is a racist. We'll be back. Welcome back. Stephen in Maui, Hawaii. Hey, Stephen, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Good to hear from you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wanting to make a point about this idea that's been talked about over and over on your show, even today, about the profit motive being between us and everything. And one example of it is that I was sitting with an older friend than myself, and this was when the first Iraq war was starting, and a newscast came on about the war, and I'm going, oh, those idiots, you know, what are they doing to our people here in this world? And my friend turned to me and goes, well, what do you know? You don't know anything. What do you know? And I go, well, let me tell you what I know. When I tell you what I know, you won't be able to deny it. So let me ask you a question. How many political parties are there in America? He goes, well, there's the Democrats, the Republicans, the Independents, and the Green Party. And I go, wrong. There's only one party in the United States, and it's called the Money Party.
I would disagree, Stephen. Large chunks of the Green Party, large chunks of the Democratic Party are not taking money from corporate interests. I mean, this is if you want to be a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which has nearly 100 members now, all elected members of Congress, you cannot take money from corporations.
Well, okay. This being said, why is there all bipartisan support for what Trump did in empowering the military by giving them billions of dollars to upgrade the whole military?
There's not. So there's a lot of Democrats who fought against that and who voted against that. The military appropriations bill was not unanimously passed by Congress.
Well, they got it through.
And it was funny. Well, they did get it through because they control the House and they control the Senate. Stephen, I get what you're saying, and I agree that the power of money is outsized in the American body politic And you know, I think it's a wonderful thing that people like you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others are rising in the Democratic Party really rapidly now. You know, Randy Bryce, Iron Stash up in Wisconsin. A lot of these people are coming to the fore, and they're doing it without corporate money and without money from billionaires. And I think that's a marvelous thing. And that gives me hope for this country. I'm not willing to sit around and say, oh, all is lost. We're all screwed. These guys, you know, they don't care about this, that, or the other thing. You know, I'm just not going to go there. Mark in San Francisco, listening on 9:10 a.m. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Not much. How are you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, Medicare and Social Security. And if you remember, Ronald Reagan taxed Social Security and paid his tax cuts with that. And
you're
now,
right.
Social Security and Medicare are like a slush fund for the Republican Party. And I think the Democrats need to...
Well, wait a minute. How are Social Security and Medicare a slush fund for... There is no slush fund.
Well, in other words, what I'm saying, Tom, is they're trying to use the tax cuts and pay for it with Medicare and Social Security cuts.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's not that it's a slush fund. It's that the tax cuts throwing this country into a $20+ trillion deficit. You know, over $1 trillion in deficit just this year, which is over $100 billion a month in deficit spending that this government engaged in this year. You know, this month, the month of August, our government borrowed more than $100 billion to give to the Koch brothers and other right-wing billionaires, and left-wing billionaires, too, for that matter, but to give to the billionaire class. You know, I get that, and the Republicans are planning on using that deficit as, you know, as, well, this is Paul Ryan has announced it, and they're going to use this deficit as an excuse to cut Social Security and Medicare. Spot on. Doesn't mean there's a slush fund, though.
Oh, you're right, Tom. The other thing is this started when Reagan taxed Social Security.
I agree.
And used it, and now it's even worse because now they're trying to cut more and using it to pay for this tax cut, which is it's disgusting.
I agree. And the Peterson Institute has been out there. You know, Mark, thank you for the call. Pete Peterson, a right-wing billionaire, you know, a Wall Street guy who made billions on Wall Street. I was a totally bizarre experience this morning. I was looking through the New York Times on my phone, and there was a, you know, book you need to know if you want to get the most out of Social Security. And I clicked on it. It was a book review. It's on today's New York Times. And it's by Pete Peterson, and it's about how Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. I'm like, what the hell? You know, who got inside the New York Times? Jay in Houston, Texas. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today? Jay, you're on the air. Okay, Jay's not on the air. Bruce in Carson City, Nevada. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind? Oh, I'm sorry. That was my fault on that one. Bruce, there you go. Now you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. How's it going?
Good.
Great show. I'm worried because of, like, your last caller and that woman before. We are, you know, you said it last time, perfect is the enemy of the good. These people who, like the Susan Tarandons of the world, we're going to lose 2020 with that attitude.
I agree.
I mean,
it's why I don't tolerate it on this program. When people come on and put that stuff out, I push back.
Exactly. I can say this truly. There isn't one Republican I would vote for over any Democrat currently.
Yeah.
There just isn't. I mean,
even the most conservative Democrats. I mean, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, right? He's gone all, you know, halfway to full Trump. He's still better than any Republican, and I would vote for him in a heartbeat over any Republican if I lived in West Virginia. Bruce, thank you for the call. Well said. And you know, fascinating times. It's summer. We're doing anything goes summer here, so we can pick up any topic you want. We'll continue tomorrow. But in the meantime, really important message. Democracy is not a spectator sport. It really isn't. We can't just sit back and watch the election returns come in on TV and go, yeah, or oh no. No, we need to be part of this, right? You need to be part of this. And there's all kinds of ways you can be part of it. The most important, joining your local party. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.